Maybe you were one of the kids who got picked late or last when captains chose up sides for kickball or some similar sport on the playground years ago. It's not a good feeling, but then there are many children who get sidelined or shunned or otherwise ignored, and they end up lonely and resentful, wondering what happened. Why will no one play with me is the obvious question, and the title of a book by Caroline McGuire. It introduces what she calls the Play Better Plan to get the lonely kids back into their rightful social group. Caroline McGuire holds a master's degree in education and several certifications as a personal coach. She is trained in coaching children with attention deficit disorder and ADHD, and she works with their families as well. Caroline McGuire, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about what led you to this field.
So I had begun working with children with ADHD more around their weaknesses in terms of executive function, meaning the management system of the brain, and just their weaknesses in organization. And I kept seeing social challenges pop up. And this was about 15 years ago, and I just also kept seeing in many children, even who don't have a diagnosis, that there was so much going on for parents nowadays and really limited guidance as to how do you change this, how do you address this, and there's just a shortage of resources. So I started really as a formerly, sort of left out, quirky, masterpiece theater watching little old person in a young person's body. I just really related to them and I wanted to help them.
So the book's title is a direct quote that apparently still resonates. Tell us that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was working with a little boy, he was in elementary school, we were working on academic stuff, and I asked him, what he would change, if he could change anything. And he wasn't interested in the academics, and he didn't, ask me about that. What he asked me was, why will no one play with me? And it really started this journey for me because I realized that what I already knew intuitively, that that's what children care about, and that, when children are struggling, it is affecting every aspect of their lives.
Now, that child's behavior was what was turning the other kids off, but it sounds like he had no idea and no idea of the tools to correct it.
Yeah, I mean, we forget sometimes that some people have gifts in other areas, and they just don't necessarily have the self-awareness to understand what they're doing. And many times that translates into adulthood, right? Where folks are not sure why, they're challenged in the workplace or why there's fit issues. And so absolutely, a lot of times kids just don't know what they're doing, or they know that they're, shy and not really meeting other kids, but they have no idea what to do about it.
It's a social skills deficit, you point out, which sounds like a tough cycle because you're lacking something. You want to fit in. You don't because of the lack, and that makes you frustrated and adds to the stress. And it's a bit of a cycle, isn't it?
It is a bit of a cycle. And I think also, when things don't go right for a period of time and you're not sure why, you start to engage in this feeling of helplessness. And, maybe you don't pursue it as much because it's so painful and you start to shut down. And that's what we see a lot in kids who are struggling with this. And so we really want to give them that help.
So let's talk about social skills deficits, because as you point out, there are certain situations where we tend to get a lot of our social skills as kids.
Absolutely. Some kids pick up these things very naturally. Other kids, it's all brain-based, right? It's all based on your brain and how you see things. And other kids just don't pick it up as easily. And we always assume kids are learning from the models around them, but there are certain kids who either don't have that model because their parents also struggle, or they just don't pick it up. And we often, I think, don't realize that we can actually help them with this and that there's long-term implications, so we want to help them with this.
Right, but as you point out, it comes from often just playing with other kids, and you bring up something called the play paradox. What is that?
So the play paradox is sort of this idea that, kids learn social skills from play and from negotiating with other kids and from working it out with other kids. But if you don't play well with others, then you don't get invited to play, and therefore the thing that is most likely to help you, you stop having as much of, and therefore there's this paradox. Play is the answer, but it's not happening for these kids, and I would say teenagers as well.
Well, so kids obviously need some reps. They need to get some experience at social skills. Does your Play Better plan restore the play, or is this a coaching technique that does something different from getting them to play again?
Absolutely, it restores the play. So the idea behind the Play Better plan is that it gives parents the information they need so they can broach the conversation with the child in a way that is not shaming, and then teach them the skills, but while teaching them the skills, have the child go on play dates, or if they're a teenager, hang out with other kids so that they are playing, they are engaging, they are practicing these skills in a way that helps to enlighten them. And it, you know, it's like anything. When you learn to swim, you continually adjust your technique till you are better at it. And that's really what we need to do. We need to continue to practice and play, and we're tweaking and adjusting and coaching the technique.
Okay, so the parent does the coaching, the kid does the playing. That's important, but the kid's going to learn a lot from the playing. Caroline McGuire's book is called Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. Welcome back to the conversation with Caroline. You can join us on the exchange by phone and email when we come back in a minute 10. You give us a list of things that people won't do as a child's coach. You're not going to get in there and do the stuff for them, I gather.
We're not going to go in and be the puppeteer who controls everything. We're really trying to guide and shepherd the child or teen so that they learn the skills, because ultimately, we want them to be successful in life. And so if they play better, they live better.
And there are five words to always keep in mind, which kind of resonate. This stuck with me for a while.
Yeah. You know, I always believe that if children could do well, they would do well. And I think that parents are often afraid of, you know, kids being manipulative, and I totally understand that. But what I find is that, like my little friend who inspired the name of the book, Why Will No One Play With Me, many of the kids that I work with and see, they really don't know. And so I really like to say, you know, they would if they could, and to really take it from that standpoint.
If they would, they could. That's the big one right there. Okay. So break it down for us. Which social skills are we talking about here, Caroline?
So there's 7 skills that I've identified that really are crucial, and these are sort of bundles of skills that I think everyone can relate to. One is emotional management. So, you know, we all have emotions. We want to have those emotions, but we need to be able to process them, and we need to be able to function and not have those dramas and those different emotional flooding take over so we cannot function. The other one is to read the room, right? So we often have situations where someone, you know, doesn't realize that everyone's sad or has had bad information or has had something happen, and they don't read the signs and signals that are going on, and therefore people's reaction is to be surprised that, you know, you're behaving this way. And then the other one is to also meet people halfway. So, you know, we all know that adult who kind of, we're always at their restaurant, we're always doing what they want, and they're sort of, you know, bossing us around. The other is read the cues, right? So our body and our voice and our facial expressions, much of social communication is not said, it's implied. And so we need to be able to read those cues. The other thing is to be flexible and adaptive, right? Because in life, one of the things that we know about folks who struggle in the workplace is that research shows this, one of the social skills that they're missing is to be flexible, to be adaptive, to kind of not go with the flow, but be able to shift and change. And I have sort of said that one of them is to walk in someone else's shoes. We talk about kindness and empathy and all of these things, and they're so important, but really all empathy is the ability to step into someone's shoes. And then the final one is to know your audience and really think of, you know, who are you talking to, and adapt your message to the audience so that you can relate to the person, and also so that, you know, you're thinking about their motivations, their intention. You know, if the boss has just announced that, you know, he or she would like to, you know, move forward from something, the next time you talk to them, you need to adapt your message, or at least go into it with certain intentions. And, you know, a lot of the kids that I work with, they just don't have that adaptation naturally, and so we have to work on it.
Carolyn McGuire is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. So the list again: manage your emotions, not be managed. Read the room, meet people halfway, understand social cues, walk into other people's shoes, be flexible and adaptive, know your audience, and adapt communication. That's one. Know your audience and adapt communication. I got a little uneasy, honestly, Caroline, when I read the list. It seems like some adults, especially in the public eye, often fall short.
I mean, many of us fall short, right? And we're not looking for perfection. But what happens in life, and we all know this, is that if folks can't read the room, or if they can't relate to others, or if they don't step into someone's shoes, they come off as insensitive, and they have a harder time in the adult world. So one of the sort of misnomers is that often I think people think, well, kids will outgrow it, or it's not as placed as high of importance. But we know that in the workplace, it's tremendously important, and no matter what you do.
Right. But when you get to examples of the kids here that that you tell stories of in the book, it's clear that there are many different mixes of social skills deficits, that, you know, as different as the kids themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is no one size fits all. And, you know, we're always trying to recognize that individuality while also helping a child be their best self.
Do labels tend to get applied to these children quickly, whether spoken out loud or not?
I think they do. When I communicate with teachers, when I hear from parents, when I'm going around the country right now, you know, speaking and whatnot, parents often will tell me stories where children are labeled pretty quickly, even if it's not spoken out loud. And then the child starts to think of themselves that way.
So take an aside here, because obviously the focus is on parents working with their kids to improve those individual kids' social skills so they'll be more acceptable to a group. But let's talk about the group. I mean, once the other kids have judged, how hard is it to get them to accept that this is a kid making changes?
You know, it's interesting. I think that in life, we often give people second chances. And one of the aspects of Why Will No One Play With Me is actually a public relations campaign that kids can do to really sort of demonstrate that they are changing. And I've seen hundreds of kids change their approach and have people give them a second chance. And the other thing is sometimes kids will need to, as people are, you know, giving them that second chance. It's not happening overnight. Maybe they will need to take those new skills to a different environment and join, you know, something else that they haven't been a part of to have a fresh chance. But I want to say that they first have to build those skills, because otherwise they're just moving with the same challenges to a different venue.
Right. It's not a geographical cure. You have to work on the stuff where you are. Let's take a phone call here. We have Howard in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Caroline McGuire.
Hello. Caroline, you said that you have this plan for children with ADD and ADHD to learn social skills through play, but do you have also a plan for children with autism and Asperger's syndrome to learn social skills through play?
Good question. Thanks for that, Howard.
That is a great question. Absolutely. So in While No One Play With Me, I give some guidance around using this plan. I often worked with kids on the spectrum, often work with kids with formerly known as Asperger's syndrome, and they can absolutely use this. And we give some guidance around adapting some things to help with that profile. But absolutely, and I think the more parents, because we're so much with our children, we need to be able to know how to help them.
Howard, thanks for shining that light. Very much appreciate it. Caroline McGuire is our guest on The Exchange. Her book is called Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. You can join the conversation, as Howard just did, 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Caroline, your first example is a bit of an eye-opener. They all are, really, but it's about the kid who wanted to watch movies he'd already seen, and this put him in conflict with the rest of the group. What was going on there?
You know, I think some kids have some anxiety, and they also get into entrenched patterns, right? And so what was going on there was he was a little nervous about things. He had things in his head, and he wanted to watch certain movies, and he wasn't also picking up on the fact that the group wasn't really all that happy with his choice and felt kind of, held hostage by it. And so one of the things that it shows is that, the story in Why Will No Play With Me that you're referring to about Patrick, he has friends. He is not without any social skills. But these kinds of challenges, so it can be one area, other kids get sick of it and they start to sort of, rebel, and it affects your social life. So with him, we had to figure out, using the open-ended questions that I use in my coaching technique, what was going on and hear his perspective. And once we did, we could figure out a way to kind of accommodate his anxiety, but also allow him to be part of a group.
So for Patrick and other kids who have these social skills deficits, is there a biological or just brain development starting point?
Sure. So in the brain, there's a management system called executive function, and it controls things like attention, memory, self-regulation, emotional regulation. And for some kids, they can have weaknesses in this executive function area and strengths in other areas. And so they're a little bit of a puzzle. And because of that, that affects all of our social abilities. Everything we do socially goes back to this executive function management system in our brain. So it's really brain-based, and it's really just a matter of helping the child move forward.
Is there a is there a catching up without help? I mean, if you just let the kid play more, is there more development, or because of the fact that the child is often sidelined, they not get the benefits of more play?
Well, because they're sidelined, they often don't get the benefits of more play. And in most cases, wait and see doesn't work, because it's not just maturity. It's actual skills and knowing what to do and how to do it. And it goes back to that, if they could, they would, right? So if, a kid like Patrick could shift and change and do what the group wants, most kids want to get along with other kids, they would do it.
Now, the first chapter has a 10-point assessment of a child. What kinds of things are you looking for here?
Absolutely. So what I try to do is give parents in the front half of Why Will No One Play With Me not only information, but, what is it that I'm looking for? What is it that a child needs to be able to do? How do I tell that there's a problem? And, there's a couple things. If a child is persistently left out, if they can't make new friends, and if they're getting feedback, and if they're telling you that they are left out and that they are not happy, then that's a sign, and we want to give them help.
So if a parent has gone through this assessment and they're still a bit baffled, things aren't quite adding up the way that it looks like they might, based on what you're providing here, is that the time to seek a professional evaluation?
Well, absolutely. If you feel concerned that your child is, having trouble and their impairment is such that they, can't necessarily do what you need them to do, and you're hearing about it from teachers and such, it's absolutely a great idea to have a professional evaluation. What I would argue is that even if a parent is working with a professional, due to time constraints, most of the time parents are still coaching but without a playbook, because we're there day in, day out. We're with our kids the most hours. And therefore, we need to know how to reinforce and how to help the child.
Carolyn McGuire is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. We have an email here from Becca in Lane County. She asks, can kids make friends through common interests? My friends were always other artists. One time a teacher got tired of us passing notes, so he made us make a cartoon of a pimple medicine ad as punishment. We loved it, says Becca.
I love that. And I was a drama kid and my friends were other drama kids. And I think that that is very true. A lot of kids do make friends through common interests. But for some kids, even reaching out and joining in and meeting those kids of common interests is really hard for them. Or they kind of resist. It might be actually the group that they would have the most in common with, but because it's hard for them, they don't necessarily seek that. So, and even within your common group, sometimes kids' behaviors alienate other kids. So it absolutely is, but we want to make sure they have the skills to fit in.
We've talked generally thus far about kids and teens, but I haven't asked specifically about, is there a bottom age group at which you would start to do this? I mean, is there too young, in other words, for the Play Better plan?
Well, what happens is that there's open-ended questions as part of the program. So children from sort of 5 and above have the ability to answer these questions. You could use some of the exercises with the younger child. You just have to know that you have to adapt them because, they aren't able to answer some of these bigger questions.
You know, I was going to ask you about the rewards to reinforce good approaches and good behaviors, but then it was almost instantly answered by your recognition in the book of the need to honor a child's aha. What does that mean?
I think as parents, it's hard for us sometimes that kids will have realizations and they're not necessarily the realization that we want. I think it's twofold. It's one, honor their realizations, even if it isn't the realization you want. And then also, those little moments when they might realize, gee, I never participate, so I'm not with the kids I like of common interest. Those are the big moments that help move a child forward. And we have to pay attention to them because it is really important and it really does move them forward.
Now, for a parent as coach, how critical is timing if there's just been an incident, some sort of blow up on the playground or something? I mean, just let the kid cool down for a while or take it up soon? Or does that matter? Is that a different thing from child to child?
I think it's a different thing from child to child, but part of Why Will No One Play With Me is something called the debriefing process. And, the communication technique of using open-ended questions and hearing the child's perspective will help you in a situation like that, so you can sit down, have a collaborative conversation, hear from the child what happened, and then sort of go through with them, and I give scripts for this if it, and parents need it, to actually look at this and what are the social implications? What happened? What can we do to help you if you're having these explosive behaviors? What strategies can we give you? So it is actually important to talk about it as soon as they're able to talk and have cooled down.
Okay, so make sure that they're at least calm, but do it soon after. You want to make sure you enforce the moment or reinforce the moment about what happened at the moment. The book is called Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. It's the work of our guest, Caroline McGuire. We'll come back and talk more with Caroline, and you can join us by phone and email here on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back in a minute 25. Among several assessments in the book, Caroline, is processing style. Run through the variations there.
Everyone has a way that they process information in their brain. And in some cases, children will be, for instance, able to be more kinesthetic so that they actually like to touch. And that's really what's helpful. Sometimes auditory processing, where you hear something and you can always remember it. Sometimes they're more conceptual. They need the big picture or visual. You know, we need to see it. And then tactile, you need to touch it, or verbal. You need to sort of say it out loud. And one of the things that I advise is that if you are trying to teach someone something, if you use their processing styles, it really helps them be more interested, be more engaged, and learn more deeply. And it makes them fun for them. You know, if your kid is a Lego kid and they like to touch things, then let's make sure that we build that piece in and make that not only part of play, but part of any skill building activity.
I'm not sure which processing style I use, but it requires a map. So do the parents as coaches work with the kids close to the group of other kids playing? Is this the kind of thing you'll talk about before a kid goes out to play? Or how does this work?
So this is definitely something you would talk about before a kid goes out to play. The processing styles, I think, is the most useful for as you're setting up and you're working with and coaching them at home, just to add that. And then as you're pre-planning a play date. So one of the things Why Will No One Play With Me advises is that some kids, we need to orchestrate the play date a little more and make sure they have the right environment, et cetera. And so if you know your kid's processing style, then it's easier to also give them something where they can feel comfortable, be engaged, and work collaboratively.
Is the hope that you start with something more structured, like the play dates you're just talking about, and then move to less structured environments as time goes on and as the kids' social skills improve?
Absolutely. Some kids really struggle outside of unstructured environments, so you want to have both. But when you're learning something new, sometimes you need, you know, the right environment to make sure that you can actually practice and you're not so overwhelmed and really bombarded by all the things you're trying to do. And so one of the things that the Play Better Plan leads parents through is, you know, what does your child need for play dates and what do we need to do to set them up for success? And we orchestrate that environment for a while. And as things get better, then we're going to introduce them, and I guide you through this, to different environments, because you have to obviously be able to play in different situations.
Let's talk about some of the things some of the specific activities that you're talking about that parents as coaches should be doing with their kids. I mean, the one that really caught my eye was social spy. This sounds a little scary at first. What does it mean?
So social spy is this concept that, you know, in order to be socially adept, you have to be watching people, noticing. And a lot of kids who struggle socially just aren't great noticers. So social spy is a fun way to get them to be more observant. We teach them and train them in a series of exercises to practice so that they're not, you know, staring blatantly at people, but they're going to practice and then go to school or go to a mall or a food court, and they're going to have a specific mission or something that they're watching or spying on, such as, you know, people's body language, how do people act when they're excited, what's their energy, and that helps them learn things like reading the room.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the instruction to adults would be observe the way other people interact, but the social spy, it makes it kind of fun, doesn't it?
It does, and I will say I use it of all ages, and sometimes teenagers, I hold back the graphics because I want them to engage and whatnot, but it really is for all ages that you have to sort of observe, and you need information in order to help your kid. Who else, you know, is like them? Who else talks about the things they talk about? What do other kids talk about in the cafeteria? That kind of thing is also part of social spy, because you need that information.
Let me come back again to the list of social skills. Manage your emotions, not be managed. Read the room. Meet people halfway. Understand social cues. Walk in other people's shoes. Be flexible and adaptive. And know your audience. So be able to adapt your communication. So we get then in the exercises section of the book to the unspoken rules and the unspoken rules field trip. Talk about how that works.
Yeah, there are always these unspoken rules in life, right? And a lot of times when folks don't read the room easily or read cues easily, they don't necessarily uncover, you know, what are the things that are unspoken in this environment? You know, if you go into certain people's houses, you don't put your feet on the table. It's very formal. Other people allow eating in the living room. Other people don't. And so one of the things that I want to do is help kids to be able on their own to figure out what are these unspoken rules if they exist in a classroom as well. So we have all these field trips where they might go to a friend's house or a neighbor's house or even their relatives and pick out, you know, what are these unspoken rules? And it's a game and they like it. You can use almost any environment because anywhere you are, there are these unspoken rules.
Like finding out that the friends you're having dinner with use a knife to cut their lettuce.
Yes, exactly.
That's when I discovered.
No fingers, please.
Right. The exercise called the polite pretend caught my eye because this is a really interesting zone, even for adults. It's not complete honesty, but it is social in our culture.
Right. Many people that I work with struggle with this idea that when you're hungry, when you're tired, when you don't feel well, that you can just be as honest as you want and, you know, maybe be in a bad mood and rub people the wrong way and, you know, that it's okay because of your emotional state. And that's not really true. I definitely think sometimes people need coping mechanisms because, you know, they're not in the right state to be with other people. But what the polite pretend is this idea that you're not being fake, but you're being polite and you're having certain civility even when you're hungry, tired, et cetera. So it is true for adults. It is something, you know, we all struggle with at times. And a lot of the kids that I work with just, they think that it's okay, and it gets them in trouble with friends and with adults.
So go meta for a second here, Caroline. If a child has a bigger deficit in one area than any other, I mean, are you going to go to that area first, or do you try to do an even distribution of all the skills?
So absolutely, you're going to go to that area because one of the things that happens within the Play Better plan is there's a questionnaire and parents fill out that questionnaire and it guides them to look at and create sort of a yellow brick road of what do I work on first, second, third. And so there may be just one area. I get this question a lot. There may be one area where the child is struggling and, you know, helping that area makes things better overall. But we definitely want to look at what is the thing that is making things hardest for them socially and alienating other people the most. And that's the area that the questionnaire will guide you to first, just by the way it's set up.
Well, and this brings us again to discussion of meeting people halfway. And again, in today's world, particularly in a world with today's political leaders and the internet, there's a lot of black-white thinking, you know, not a lot of idea for compromise.
Absolutely. And, you know, political aside, in life, you have to compromise. So one of the things that happens is that some kids who, you know, struggle with compromise become adults that struggle with compromise. And we know from research and from our own lives that that impedes their ability in the workplace someday. And that also makes things harder at school and with friendships. So we have to kind of learn to meet people halfway. And I admit right now the culture is not necessarily modeling that, but we as parents have to model it at home if everyone else isn't modeling it. And we can certainly influence the way the child thinks by doing that.
So here's another skill that that could be elusive for adults, reading a room. Talk about the exercises you take kids through here to get them to realize not to come into a room blurting or doing whatever they might do otherwise.
So the idea here is that there's a series of exercises within Why Will No One Play With Me, because people talk about reading the room, but no one has really ever sort of laid out what do you do, how do you do it beyond professionals who do this. So the idea is that you would take a child to different environments and you'll teach them all of the different skills that make up reading the room, like looking at unspoken rules, like reading social cues, reading people's energy. What's the context? You know, if you walk into a room and everybody else is upset, then you adapt your behavior. And so these exercises are fun. They're out in the community. You can get on the subway or get in your car and, you know, go somewhere and people watch in a box store, and the child can learn to read the room, and it really helps them in life.
This is kind of like social spy on a larger scale. It's less about individual interactions than about just taking the mood for a whole place at one time.
Absolutely. And when kids don't have great social skills or ability to read the room, they don't often have an easy time reading things like mood. It's very intangible. And so the exercises, it is spy on a greater level, and the exercises help them learn that there is this thing about reading the mood, and then that, how do you do that?
Now, conversations and good listening skills, this really is a one-on-one kind of thing. I mean, is this more for the advanced class, you know, the kids who've made some progress already?
So there is sort of an unspoken trajectory that brings you in terms of your skill level up in Why Will No One Play With Me, definitely, for sure. And, you know, I think the good listening lessons start out with, you know, some more simple exercises, and they progress. Being a good listener is just so important. I mean, you do this for a living, and it's something that really gets in some kids' way. So I would say that you can even do it at dinner. You can take an exercise, like build on that, where you actually, you know, go back and forth in a conversation, and you pause and listen, and you can have everybody do it, because everybody in the family can always benefit from something like this.
Now, you point out that this is there's a lot of stuff in this book, but that if people cared enough to buy the book, they obviously had enough time to catch up on what you're suggesting, so they have the time potentially to do the work here. And as you point out, there's a bridge to betterness. Kids don't leap the chasm all at once. Now, how much, particularly with younger children, is the parent going to share the ultimate intents here with the kids? Or, you know, how much just take the language down to a kid level and say, we're just going to make it easier for you to play?
I think one of the things that the book guides you through is to take the language down to their level. And, you know, friendship and play and the ability to be with other people, that can be the conversation. And that's sort of where I guide you to. You don't have to say, gee, you have social skills deficits. I wouldn't use that language. What I am trying to help parents do is have a series of conversations about this, not just one epic conversation, and allow the child to also express what they would like. And most of the time, they want things to improve. And we're giving them this idea of everybody is working on something, and here's what we're going to work on. And that's why I always advise, if one kid is working on the Play Better plan, other kids in the house can be working on other things, and that makes everyone feel better.
Caroline, do you build pauses into the Play Better plan, a chance to give the kid a rest and to just sort of observe him for a while?
I think that the pauses are more built in terms of they play, they have play dates. You know, I advise continuing until I guide you through signs when they really can progress to another lesson, or they've really done well with the skill. You can have a pause, too, that's just them playing and using the skill. It doesn't have to be formal. They're getting to use the skill and have more fun. But I don't advise taking huge breaks, because then sometimes we don't recover from those breaks.
Okay, there can be some backsliding. Caroline, it's a pretty big book. Have you given all of your methods away, or did you save any for yourself?
I think I saved some more, and I definitely would like to continue. And I have a lot on my website, CarolineMaguireAuthor.com, that parents can, you know, use, because I've said a lot today.
Yeah, you have indeed. CarolineMaguireAuthor.com. Caroline holds a master's degree in education and several certifications as a personal coach. Her book is Why Will No One Play With Me? The Play Better Plan to Help Children of All Ages Make Friends and Thrive. Caroline, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for today's exchange. We're online at jeffexchange.org. Our program is produced by John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News. Student assistant Randy Babbitt is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Stay safe in the weather. Have a great day.